$5 registration? Yeah, seriously. I told you, you want to be there. For more information, click the link. Comfort, comfort on the Issues Etc. homepage, issuesetc.org.
All the churches in Mosul are closed. And with the imposition now of a very strict Islamic law inside Mosul, it's looking increasingly unlikely that they'll be able to return anytime soon.
When Christian churches move to dealing with social causes, when you've lost the gospel, you have nothing unusual to offer.
Look what he did with Joseph. Look what he did with Jesus. And then consider what he can do also with you, because God specializes in raising the dead.
Hello. I want to say that foreigners with English as a second language also love Issues Etc. Bye.
I think it's true. 30 years ago, if you knew nothing other than that a lawmaker at the national level, or even at the state level, was Roman Catholic, you could probably win a bet if you were to bet that they were also a member of the Democratic Party 30 years ago. Maybe it's the influence of JFK and his family on politics. Who knows what it is, but that was a pretty fair bet 30 years ago. Not so today. There's a story from the Religion News Service by Sarah Pulliam Bailey, regular guest here on the program. Meet the evangelical Catholics who are remaking the GOP, the Republican Party. So what does the Roman Catholic perspective bring to the Republican Party that the Republican Party needs? And what has changed from 30 years ago? Welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse will be with us for the first 10 minutes or so to talk about Roman Catholics and the Republican Party. A little bit later, Pastor Tom Baker will be teaching a Sunday school lesson. We'll be in 1 Kings chapter 17, Elijah the prophet at the book Cherith, where he is being sustained. He is surviving a drought by water that is sent to him miraculously. We'll see what he has to say about that text in about 15 minutes here on Issues Etc. You can give us a call as well for the next hour, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MY-IE. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet at issuesetc. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is a regular guest, founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and the book Love and Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
You are on the road. You are actually in Michigan right now. What are you doing up there?
Well, I'm in Michigan to participate in the Acton University that will be held in Grand Rapids, Michigan. There'll probably be 700 or 800 people from all over the world to come and learn the Acton Institute's unique combination of free market economics and Christian anthropology and social teaching. So that's what I'm doing here.
What do you hope to take away from that?
Well, besides my honorarium check for being one of the speakers.
yes.
A lot of cool people. I will be meeting a lot of wonderful people there. I suspect one of your Catholic counterparts, Al Cresta, from Ave Maria Radio, will be there interviewing people live on the site. And I'll meet people from all over the world who will be interested in free market economics and in the family and how love and economics work together, as I'm known for explaining how the family and the market fit together and how one cannot really sustain a free society without paying attention to the family. So I'll be meeting a lot of very cool people, and I'll have new names on the Ruth Institute mailing list, and I'll have new friends from all over the world. That's what I expect.
Okay, speaking of that Roman Catholic perspective, it's no news that the Republican Party has become, in the last several years, more associated, especially at the national level, with the Roman Catholic Church. There have been some conversions of people who were formerly Baptists or something else, lawmakers who have converted to Roman Catholicism. What does that perspective, the Roman Catholic perspective, bring to the GOP that the GOP needs right now?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I mean, I would say, first of all, the attempt by the GOP to reach out to Roman Catholics goes back to Ronald Reagan. He was the person who really tried to create a bigger Republican tent by reaching out to Roman Catholics who traditionally, as you mentioned, tend to be Democrats. And so what do the Catholics bring that the GOP needs? Well, they bring a certain number of voters. For example, my dad would be considered a Reagan Democrat in the sense, and that category of Reagan Democrat, that was a real phenomenon back in the 1980s. These are people who had very traditional social values, but who were used to voting Democratic because they were ethnic Catholics, and they learned to get over some of their traditional suspicion of the Republican Party because they sensed that the Republican Party had something to offer them on social issues and on cultural issues. So my dad, for example, was a lifelong Democrat, always voted straight Democratic Party ticket, and at the same time always voted no on every bond issue that ever came up in the city of Columbus. I mean, he was always against more taxes, right? And he could not stomach what the hippies did to the Democratic Party. That's the way he viewed it, you know, that the hippies took over the party. And so he would be a classic example of a Reagan Democrat. And so I think what we have is a, you know, kind of a continuing attempt to build a coalition among some Roman Catholics who can fit into parts of the Republican worldview. But it's always a little bit dicey because Catholics are so many have a kind of tribal attachment to the Democratic Party with this sort of instinctive idea that the Democratic Party is the party of the little guy and so on. That's the traditional idea that everybody always had. The Democrats are party of the little guy. The Republicans are the party of the rich people. Okay, so we're going to be Democrats because we don't think of ourselves as rich people. Well, a lot has changed in all of those different stereotypes, and so the Catholic vote is something that's very much up for grabs, and the Republicans are, if they're intelligent, they're going to try to make a bid for that.
So what do you think has changed? I mentioned before that, you know, 30 years ago, if you knew nothing more about a national-level lawmaker than that he was Roman Catholic, you were pretty safe in saying, okay, then he is also a member of the Democratic Party. That's a pretty safe bet there. That's not a safe bet today. What has changed? What on either side, either on the Republican Party or on the Roman Catholic side, kind of the ethos there, that is making breaking that traditional association?
I don't think there's any question what it is, Todd. The biggest thing it is abortion. It's the life issue. It's the pro-life issue. The Democrats forfeited their claim to be the party of the little guy when they decided that they were going to go full in for the abortion lobby. You know, it doesn't get any littler than the baby in the womb, you know. And so Roman Catholics, if they're good Roman Catholics, are appalled by the party, by the Democrats allowing themselves to become the party of death. And so what you have are Republicans who are, or sorry, which you have a Roman Catholics who are serious about their pro-life views, are looking for a home, and the Republican Party is the best they can do right now. But it's an uneasy home in the Republican Party because there are so many rich Republicans who would just like to walk away from the life issues. They'd like to walk away from all of the social issues. They find them troublesome and uncomfortable and undignified and so on. And the Democrats, on the other hand, have basically sold their soul to Planned Parenthood and their allies. And so for some Roman Catholics, their traditional attachment to the Democratic Party trumps their what should be their pro-life views, you know. And so I think it's all about the politics of abortion and the other social issues. Increasingly, gay marriage would be on that list too. But what you have, I think, in my opinion, is the rich people of both parties basically like the sexual revolution. You know, you've got rich people in the Republican Party who'd like to dodge the whole thing. It's no secret that large donors on the Democratic side have poured many millions of dollars into funding abortion, into funding gay marriage, and so on. And so what you have is a question of who's going to represent the middle class and the lower class on those kind of issues. And the Republicans right now are the only people who are even in the game on that. But they could lose it because their heart isn't in it completely. So I think that's what's driving the Roman Catholics into being a swing vote. It's an open question who's going to be able to bid for them on those grounds.
So we saw it. We've seen lip service given in national elections, in national level elections, by Republican candidates, either for the presidency or for Senate or for the House. They'll give lip service to the life issue. But the ones that will actually kind of draw the line and say, this is a defining issue for me as a presidential candidate or a lawmaker, are very few and far between. So does that account for the unease, the fact of the matter that the higher you rise in either party, in a lot of cases, the less pro-life or the lower your convictions on the life issue become?
Well, I think that's right, because the people at the top who control the money don't care about that issue. Or if they care about it, they care about the other direction, right? The sexual revolution has worked out pretty well for the rich people. And those who are well-to-do and pro-life and pro-marriage, they know perfectly well that they are unusual among their wealthy peers. You know, that many, many so-called country club Republicans are all about the social issues, in the sense that, you know, they'll take their teenage daughter down to get them on birth control, or they'll take their teenage daughter to get an abortion because they don't want to be embarrassed by their teenage daughter messing up her life with an unwanted pregnancy. So they want all that to be available because it's convenient for them. And in the meantime, they're oblivious to the ways in which the disconnect between sex and procreation has undone the culture, particularly in the lower classes and the middle class. You know, that marriage is disappearing from the lower classes, and people have no clue that their policies have something to do with that, you know. And so there's this kind of myopia that the people at the top have. Gee, this is all convenient, and it's working for us. And, you know, we really don't much care that there's 70% out of wedlock childbearing amongst the poor. We really couldn't care less. Whereas many Catholic middle-class people care a lot about that and would like something to be done about it. But they can't find a champion. You know, they're looking around for somebody who will champion their views and who will become a real standard bearer for them. And it's hard to find somebody who's, who will be good on those issues and then also appealing on all the other issues that people have to deal with as well.
Talk about this element. I think we've discussed it at length with you before, but every election cycle, the stories begin to proliferate about a big name in the Democratic Party who's also Roman Catholic, and on the life issue, their local bishop will say, think about your position. Sometimes they'll be very gentle about it, say, think about your position on life before you come and commune at a Roman Catholic altar. Some of the braver among them will say, I cannot accept you at the altar, at the communion rail, because of your position and the way that you have been voting and acting on the issue of life. Is that also having an impact on those who say, look, I have this pro-life conviction, I'm a lawmaker, maybe my most natural home, at least ethically, is in the Roman Catholic Church?
Well, I certainly would hope that people who are pro-life feel that they are ethically at home in the Roman Catholic Church, no matter what their profession might be. I certainly hope that anybody like that would feel at home in the Catholic Church. I wish more of the bishops would be more forthright about these questions. It's always a question of prudence as to what they say. If they make a big stink about it, are they going to do more harm than good? But honestly, I think there are a lot of genuinely scandalous, in the literal sense of scandal, scandalous people out there who are saying, oh, I'm a good Roman Catholic, but at the same time, I'm going against the church's teaching on one of the most important issues of our time, the defining issue of our time, really. And people might be interested to know that Kathleen Sebelius is not to present herself for communion in her home diocese in Kansas. That's not widely known, but it is a fact that her bishop told her, you know, bye-bye. They're always hoping that they'll come back and come round, but you know the scandal that these people create is simply is a huge, huge problem. And I have to say, and I often do say this to Roman Catholic audiences, you know, look, you guys, if we, as Roman Catholics, if we had embraced the Church's teaching back in 1968 when it was clarified, if we had embraced Humana Vitae instead of fighting with Pope Paul VI over birth control, there is simply no way our culture would be in the condition that it's in today. And, you know, if just the Roman Catholics had held the fort on that question, you know, the Democratic Party couldn't have gone off the rails the way that it did. But instead, people started looking around how can we do the least necessary to stay in the good graces of our church kind of attitude, rather than following Jesus in the most radical and complete and thoroughgoing, loving way that we can, which is to be open to life and to embrace life and to be generous with life. That's what our church is telling us to do. And I think if we were doing that, you know, we'd be attractive, and a lot of y'all's other churches would be able to hold the line better. So in a sense, we owe you guys an apology. So I'm sorry that we didn't do that.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California, and she taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's author of the book Smart Sex and Love and Economics. You can check out the Ruth Institute tonight. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Listen on Demand. Jennifer, thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Tom Baker. He's host of a radio show called Law and Gospel. He joins us every week to teach a Sunday school lesson. And when we come back, it'll be Elijah at the Brook Cherith in 1 Kings chapter 17. Those few verses there deal with God providing for Elijah, not just providing for him, but actually keeping him alive. It's a story of survival. We'll talk about it with Pastor Tom Baker right after this.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
If you're in a small parish, you know how difficult it can be to find an organist when your musician is sick, has a family emergency, or simply wants a week off to visit the grandkids. Church Music Solutions can help. Our substitute organist service allows you to select your hymns and liturgy to be sent to an iPad that plays your church's organ. The best way to learn more is to log on to churchmusicsolutions.com and request a free demo kit. There are no obligations and there's no sales pitch. Keep singing with Church Music Solutions.
Talk radio for the Christian worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Trinity Lutheran, Brooklyn, New York. Hope Lutheran, Birmingham, Alabama. Our Savior Lutheran, Paradise, California. St. John Lutheran, Ray, Michigan. Peace with Christ Lutheran, Fort Collins, Colorado. Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Kimberling City, Missouri. The Lutheran Church of Our Savior, Salinas, California, St. John's Lutheran, Algoma, Wisconsin, and St. John's Lutheran, Colton, California. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org and click support. The Issues Etc. 300.